Hello, everybody. This week at 4AM Films, we're talking about Moonlight.
But not Moonstruck.
Not Moonstruck, because it's a different title, so it's not even comparable.
There's no Cher.
Hit the music! Oh, I thought you forgot about that. Hello, I'm Michael Flaherty.
And I'm Colleen Flaherty. This is Flaherty's on Films, where we talk about really fun, totally commercial films. Michael, what are we talking about this week?
Oh, this will be an exciting podcast. I'm excited for it. This is Moonlight. I'll read the description here. A young African-American man grapples with his identity and sexuality while experiencing the everyday struggles of childhood, adolescence, and burgeoning adulthood.
Can I ask a dumb question?
Yeah.
What does it mean when you call a film, so this is something I saw described as a lot, a coming of age film? Can that just be somebody being a child and then an adult in any context?
Yeah, but I mean, it's about growing up. So you can't just see a child and then an adult.
And then surprise, people get older. Okay. So they have to grow in some way.
Yeah, there's probably films where the main character is like a flashback as them as a kid, but you wouldn't call that a coming of age story just because they were a kid.
So it has to be linear. They have to start out as kid and then grow.
I mean, it's just got to be about that.
Okay. Do you feel like this was a coming of age film?
I mean, it's definitely about his life.
I guess, yeah. He did come of an age.
He came right of that age.
Michael, have you seen this before?
No, I recommended the film just because I wanted to see something new. And this seemed like a good candidate because it won a lot of awards and looked serious and good.
They thought the Oscar went to La La Land, which fuck that film. But then surprise.
Wait, I thought I disliked that film. You disliked that film, too?
Does anybody like La La Land?
Oh, I thought you. Yeah, Sam likes it. I thought you guys both liked it.
Ew, gross. I hate everything about that movie.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't like it either.
Cool.
But this movie, I think, has some good parts. And some bad parts.
Yeah, I think this movie is a bit pretentious. It's very good.
What does that mean?
It's not my kind of film. Which part?
Don't just say it's good. What's good?
I think it's a well-done film. Beautiful cinematography, fantastically acted. Subtly conveying pain and a very specific kind of subculture specific.
I mean, I hate to break out our old Flaherty on Films adage, but if you're complimenting a movie and the first thing you say is good cinematography, that ain't a good movie.
Or it's just not a movie for me. No. Which is kind of my ultimate conclusion.
I like that. I'm going to stick to the adage. I think it's a great adage. Is adage the word? Is that even a word?
I like it a lot. I don't even care if using it correctly. I do tend to agree. Like, if the first thing you say about a movie is, oh, it's really pretty. But this movie is really pretty. I'm sorry.
I'll go a step further and say it has better traits than its cinematography.
Yes, I agree. It's just the first thing I thought of.
My first thing I thought of is like, wow, I think I might be too ADD for the movie just because it's kind of slow. And so you really have to like pay attention.
Not even that long.
And it's purposefully not gripping you. You know, it doesn't start out with the big action scene. You know,
it's very subtle.
We don't see the Capulets and the Montagues fighting, which would be good. We got to just kind of wait for the thing to happen.
Well, I think this is compared to Brokeback Mountain as an award-winning film about two gay men in a very masculine culture. But it is so different because Brokeback Mountain is very dramatic and loud and also very pretty.
You know what else is dramatic and loud? I just want to go there because I got the segue.
Yes!
Our first segment. Bam, time for Sam.
Time for Sam! This is the part of the show where Sam comes on and tells us some facts.
Dramatic and loud. That is the best segue you've ever had.
Thank you. I had to force it kind of in there.
You did.
Director Barry Jenkins was looking for his next film. He wanted to do something more personal. And in the Borsch Arts Collection in Miami, he found a play called In Moonlight, Black Boys Look Blue, written by Terrell Alvin McCraney. McCraney had written the play in 2003. It was semi-autobiographical, and was his creative outlet to deal with the grief of losing his mother to AIDS. McCraney, however, could not get his play produced, and it would be forgotten for over a decade until Barry Jenkins found it. After reading the play, Jenkins immediately reached out to McCraney, and the two men spoke about the play and how it reflected both of the men's youth. Jenkins decided that he was going to make this his new film, and he would spend a month reworking the play into a screenplay called Moonlight. Once he had his screenplay, he brought it around Hollywood to try and get interest. He was struggling to find anyone to produce Moonlight until he met with Brad Pitt. Pitt would help Jenkins get the necessary budget and secure a distribution deal.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Three actors were needed to represent different time periods in the lives of the characters Chiron. Is that it? Chiron?
I think so.
Okay. Chiron and Kevin. The younger actors were found in Miami during a casting call, while the older actors had previous experience in the business. Jenkins made sure that the actors playing the same characters never met. So all of the Chiron and all the Kevin actors never met each other. Because he wanted the actors to find their own interpretations of the characters. The hardest actor to secure was actually Naomi Harris, who played Paula, the mother of Chiron. At the beginning of her career, Harris committed to only portraying women in a positive light, and she was very hesitant to portray a cracked addict. However, Jenkins reached out to her and confided how the character was actually based on his own mother and her struggles with addiction. After their talk, Harris took the role. However, at the time of filming, Harris was promoting her film Spectre and had some visa issues because she's British and they didn't really want her in America. Yep.
She's British? Oh, she's great.
So all of her scenes had to be filmed in just 3 days.
Whoa.
It's even more impressive when you think about the fact that she's the only actor to be featured in all three acts that span 15 years. So I don't know anything about being an actor, but I'm assuming that's really hard to have emotional depth of 15 years in 3 days.
Yeah, it was super good. I was thinking, I don't remember her in Spectre. Then I realized I don't remember Spectre at all.
Also, well, Spectre sucked. Do you remember that?
What was the good one? People said, oh, this one's the good one.
Casino Royale?
No, I thought people said that about Spectre, but I feel like they're
Skyfall?
All bad. Yeah, it was Skyfall.
Yeah, Skyfall.
Yeah.
So, filming took place over 25 days in the fall of 2015. About 80% of the film was actually shot in Liberty City neighborhood in Miami. It is one of the most poverty-stricken areas in the U.S., and there were some concerns about the safety of the production. However, when word got out to the neighborhood that Jenkins, who was from the neighborhood and still had family there, was directing the film, the locals became exceptionally welcoming and helpful. Harris would say about it, quote, "It was the first time someone had come to their community and wanted to represent it on screen. And since Barry Jenkins had grown up in that area, there was this sense of pride and this desire to support him. You felt this love for the community that I had never felt in any other location anywhere in the world. And it was so strange that it happened in a place where people were expecting the complete opposite."
Very cool.
So Moonlight would premiere in a couple different festivals, but it would premiere in theaters on November 18th, 2016. Worldwide, it would gross $65.3 million. So it wasn't a blockbuster, but let's put this in perspective. With adjustment from inflation, Moonlight had the smallest budget of any Academy Award winning Best Picture film.
Wow.
With a budget of, well, that's your question of the week. What was the budget for Moonlight?
Okay, remind me what a normal budget is.
I read that Rogue One was $200 million.
Okay,
that's probably not.
Was Ali famous at the time? Because he's like very famous now.
He was in
Luke Cage.
No, House of Cards.
Oh, he's got that loose. Oh
yeah. Okay.
He was in House of Cards at first because they were kind of nervous about his role in House of Cards. And they're like, he can't play the dramatic part yet. And
why did they think that?
Because his part was kind of silly in House of Cards. Like, it wasn't like the most. But
gotcha.
I loved his character in House of Cards. Okay, I'm going to go $6 million.
I'll go $10 million.
$1.5 million.
Damn.
They got the actor actress though.
Well, and Janelle, I don't know her name, but the girlfriend Teresa.
Yeah, she's like super famous.
Yeah. So to put in the debate on this is because the other lowest film was actually $1.1 million, but adjusted for inflation.
What was that?
It was Rocky.
Oh, sure. Makes sense.
So I don't know if that's an interesting comparison there for you guys, because you've seen both of them, but those are like the two lowest best pictures and how they compare to each other. It's kind of interesting. So yeah.
I feel like Rocky didn't have any stars at all.
No, it did not.
Yeah.
Actually, yeah, there was a lot about how cheap this, a lot of facts about it. Just like, they all had to have one trailer. There was literally only a one stall bathroom for everyone, like cast and crew. Jeez. Just because they didn't have the budget for anything.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And the actors didn't get paid exceptionally well for this. But
any royalties? So.
I don't know about that, actually. I should have looked up that.
Hey, breaking news. Packers just beat the Minnesota Vikings.
Woo!
Suck it, Vikings. That's for those at home who don't know, Samantha's from Minnesota. We are from Wisconsin. And none of us really care about football that much. But
no, but that's the harsh breaking news. They don't appreciate it. Okay, so this film was big at the Academy Awards. It was nominated for 8 and it would win 3. So it was nominated for Best Picture, Best Director, Best Supporting Actor for Ali, Best Supporting Actress for Harris, Best Adapted Screenplay, Best Original Score, Best Cinematography, and Best Film Editing. The three that it would win was Best Supporting Actor, Best Adapted Screenplay, and Best Picture. And the famous, it was the presenters were given the wrong envelope, so they accidentally said La La Land, but it was Moonlight. You already kind of talked about it.
Was it the wrong envelope, or did he just read it incorrectly?
It was the wrong envelope, so it was actually a duplicate envelope for the best actress, which had just been announced. And
people
Emma Stone
were confused because it said on it, like, very obviously best actress and the actress's name. So people were like, how did you not realize this was a mistake?
But you're on stage and you're nervous, you know.
What's Warren fucking Beatty? Is he nervous?
I mean,
he's like, oh, look at all these people staring at me.
Gulp.
Yeah, so it was kind of a weird situation, but anyways, they won.
I kind of believe the idea that maybe it was a bit of a setup because nobody likes to watch the Oscars or talk about the Oscars anymore.
I mean, it's memorable.
You're a conspiracy
That's all
head?
I could say when you talked about doing this film was, Moonlight, that's the one that
he
got
just saw a card,
up.
He just looked for a title, he said it. I believe that.
I actually do believe that. I'm not really, but wouldn't that be fun if it was a conspiracy?
It would be fun.
So my final fact for you guys today is that with winning some stuff at the Academy Awards, they broke some records. So I will read those to you. So the producer, Dee Dee Gardner, was the first woman to win the Academy Award for Best Picture twice. So she won for this one and then 12 Years a Slave.
Mm.
This is the first film that prominently talks about LGBT issues. And to win an Academy Award. It's also the first film featuring an all-black cast. Yep.
Jeez.
Yep. No, these record breakings aren't really super happy.
Huh.
So it's the first film also to have an all-black cast to win Best Picture. Ali is the first person of Muslim faith to win an Academy Award for acting. And my final one is, this is the first Academy Award Best Picture winner by a Black filmmaker who both directed and wrote the screenplay.
Wow. All That's right.
Very cool.
That was BAM.
10 for Sam. I love that you said, oh, Ali from Luke Cage.
He was in it. He was a big part of that.
I know he was in it, but like, come on.
What? Come on. He was good in it. People know Luke Cage. It's a popular
show. People do not know Luke Cage.
Everybody knows Luke Cage.
He was like in Green Book, which also won a Best Actor, and True Detective.
I didn't see fucking Green Book. Hey, it's a popular... Comic books are popular. What's the highest grossing movie of all time? Avengers Endgame. I prove a checkmate. I won.
What's the most successful Netflix series of all time? Not Luke Cage.
Yeah, it's a go. I don't think it did that well.
I think they canceled it after one season.
There's a second season.
Oh, is there really?
There's a second season. I mean, spoilers, Mahershala Ali dies halfway through the first season, but...
Oh, good for you for saying his first name. I didn't want to be the first one to say it.
Oh, well, there you go.
I was going to say it wrong. Oh my gosh. Have you seen his birth name though? Whoa.
What's his birth name?
This is not a visual medium, but it is Mahershala Hashbaz.
Oh, yeah. A few more syllables in there.
Yeah. I guess the Z's really threw me off here. I just sent it to you in the chat so you can look at it.
I am now looking at it.
Boy, oh boy, oh boy, you people at home.
Audience, if you were looking at it, you'd be like, wow.
Wow. Anyway, why don't we go to our next segment?
What is it called? Critics Corner.
Oh, okay. This movie is very highly rated with the critics. It's like a 98% on Rotten Tomatoes. The only famous critic I could see that didn't like it had a pretty interesting review that people did not take too well. That art films are usually for upper middle class white people and they would not get this film.
Huh.
So she didn't understand all the hype.
Okay.
That's interesting. Okay. I will start. Moonlight is hard to classify, even harder to describe in terms of its considerable achievements, says Paul Bryans of the City Morning Herald.
If I read all these Amazon reviews like I normally do, I'm probably going to be reading a bunch of homophobes, right? Anyway, let's go to our first Amazon review. This is by The Truth.
Yes, Amazon it is. Review.
That's already bad. That's a red light. What's that called? Red. Code Red. Just another way to exploit the gay agenda, IMO. I'm tired of being forced to accept LGBT when blacks are still discriminated and profiled. I was looking for a riveting movie to watch, but a misleading trailer got me. Now, why did I continue watching, some may ask? Clearly because I think for myself. Secondly, I wanted to see how it all unravels. In the end, I was taking to straight men, the most rugged they could find, and paint them as homosexuals. I was able to escape Brokeback successfully. Not so lucky this time around. Damn it, I knew I should have clicked watch now for Narnia instead. I don't understand anything I just read.
I think you're overthinking it then.
Yeah, I am completely lost.
A deconstruction of traditional masculinity as a societal prison. Moonlight never asks for compassion. It entrusts viewers to contain it within themselves, says Matt Cipolla of Film Monthly.
I'm looking at the reviewer list here. Where's Peter Bradshaw?
I didn't include Peter Bradshaw.
He took a break this week. All right.
I was worried. I looked it up. I'm like, is Peter Bradshaw even still alive, maybe? And that was the problem. He is still alive doing movie reviews.
Nice. So. Good job, Pete. This is by Crazy Cat Guardian, who I'm going to trust this review. I really wish I did not watch this movie. I'm tired of strong black men with a lead role always being portrayed as gay in movies.
I think the word always is doing a lot of work there.
That's just every time. Every single time.
Black man in a role. It's like they're always gay.
Here's my problem is that they're always gay. Why are they always gay?
I'm like, can I even think of one other one? Yeah, well, can I think of three more examples?
Well, that's why it's 100%. That's left off.
Unique and universal, bleak and hopeful, compassionate and humane. Moonlight eschews ordinary answers, constructs, and definitions, says Brent McKnight of The Last Thing I See.
Sorry, laughing at the last review here. This next one's by an Amazon customer. Whoa, uncomfortable. Didn't really like the plot twist where those two guys got up all in each other's ish. So he's just homophobe.
Is ish a thing the young people say, Michael?
I have no idea. I'm not young.
Sure. You're less than 30.
I'm less than 30. That's technically true. That was Critics Corner.
All right. Let's go to our favorite and least favorite part.
What do you want to do first?
Let's do least favorite.
Okay.
This is a complaint I famously had in this podcast, is I just don't like movies that have no levity in them whatsoever.
Do you like The Godfather?
There's some jokes.
There's no jokes.
There's some jokes.
Where, what, some, What's two jokes? Because there's the cannoli one.
Damn it.
Then there's no other jokes.
No, there's like a, you know, they do a little playful dialogue.
Oh, it's, yeah, is okay. there?
It doesn't have to be straight up jokes, but it has to be some like joy, some like fun, some levity.
There's no joy in Godfather.
I guess we're going to agree to disagree.
Mm-hmm.
But like even, I felt like even Schindler's List had levity in it, you know, and that's a famously sad film.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, yeah. So I don't know. I just don't know if this kind of film is for me because it did a very good job of doing a thing that I just didn't enjoy very much. So yeah, what was your least favorite part?
So yeah, this movie has some strengths. Like I said in the beginning, it doesn't really grip you because, I don't know. It's just, but like, I feel like it's just not trying to be that kind of movie. So that's fine. But there were just some parts where I felt like that seems a little over the top. When Mahershala is teaching Little to swim and he's like, he has him in the water and it's like a nice shot, but they're like playing the aggressive classical music in the background. I don't know. I just get the kind of vibes like, oh, this feels kind of pretentious. This feels like a little bit much. When
It's orchestral versions of rap songs from the time too, if you want to like
that, it makes it better. But when they show Kevin at the diner and then there's like the weird, do you know what I'm talking about, where there's like the weird shots of Kevin where he's like smoking and looking into the camera and it's like kind of artsy shots.
It's very, I mean, it's like an art house film.
That doesn't make it better.
No, I know. I'm confirming what you are saying.
Oh, well.
I'm agreeing with you.
I just don't know what it added to the film. There's other things but that I don't think added to the film, but maybe I'm just dumb. Like, so Mahershala Ali, I mean, I guess we'll talk about this when we get to the plot, but the boy meets Mahershala Ali and Teresa, and by the end of the film, I didn't totally get why they were in the film.
Yeah, I think they're kind of trying to make a point about the importance of a parental role and how that you can get lost. But then, like, what did they even do for
him? Yeah, I guess I just don't like, I get it that it's nice when you treat the audience with respect and you don't hammer home the messages. But I need a little hammering, you know, have it in your tool belt. Like, I don't want to have to read in so much. Like, oh, the way he looked, that obviously represents this and this. Like, I need a little bit more to go off on.
I guess I feel like you could say that about anybody in this film, though, because it wasn't really about much.
Yeah,
it
I mean, I like, am saying that about everything in the movie.
I feel like Mahershala, like, his character was just to kind of really say some interesting dialogue. Like, I feel like that's why he was in the movie.
Yeah, so I'm like...
More than he was there for our character's coming of age.
Yeah.
I actually... There's one scene that I really bumped on.
Is that good or bad?
Bad, but in a way that I'm probably just dumb and don't really get it. But, yeah. So the mom, I thought, was actually really phenomenal. And to Sam's point, I thought she was definitely... She definitely rose above the sort of stereotypical black woman crack addict kind of thing and was a very interesting character despite not being on screen that long. But there's this scene where Mahershala goes up to her and is like, "You're a mom. What are you doing?" And then she's like, "Hey, man, you're the one who's selling it to me." And it's like, yeah, wow, that's pretty good stuff. But then she says this line where she's like, "And don't give me that. You'll get it anywhere. I'm getting it from you." And it's like, it feels like that's an argument for someone who's watching a movie. That's what they would say. Like, that's not like real dialogue. Like, aha, I know what everyone would say normally in a film like this, but aha.
She goes, "And now cinema sins. I will correct you now."
I get it. That's a really dumb complaint. So it's not even something I disliked, but I just thought... I don't know.
What did you really like?
I just thought it was very well acted. I thought every single performance was spot on. Very subtle, very interesting.
Even the kid. Both the kids.
Oh, Jesus. And the kids, like, every actor who played Chiron,
yeah.
You know, he had almost no dialogue. And yet, I'm like, wow, what an actor.
Yeah.
Which is something. And that's neat that they're both their kids from Miami. I like that. Miami is like kind of pretty in a gross way, a way that really translates well to this kind of film. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of bright colors and but seediness, and it's like, man, it's just like, yeah. I don't know. Anyway,
good acting, pretty.
Good acting, very pretty. That's what I enjoyed about it. And it's not that long, like that.
It's a full 2 hours.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Oh, maybe it's because I watched it in pieces.
Yeah, I watched it in 2 1-hour pieces.
What did you like about the film?
It's hard if you have ADD and you can't focus and you like explosions to really watch this movie. But the slowness helps in a couple of ways. The movie feels really authentic. It feels very realistic. Like, I think about this all the time about the show Ozark. Do you ever watch that show?
I sure do.
That show really, because there's so much plot, there's so many bits that happen, and it just feels like it's written by people who have never done drugs. It just feels so fake. And this feels like the opposite of that. It feels like the opposite of Ozark. Everything feels really real.
I think that's really cool that you would mention that comparison, because Ozarks is also very stylized, and that's not the reason it doesn't feel authentic.
Right. It's totally true. So it makes the movie feel more realistic, but then it also makes, I mean, very little happens in the movie, but it does make the things that happen feel really great. When Chiron's in the high school and he's about to beat the kid with the chair, I didn't even know what was really happening because the movie's just not very eventful. So I kind of just thought he was angry, even though the music was clearly foreshadowing that something was happening. It was like really building. I'm like, what's going to happen? And then when he hit the kid, I was like, whoa. I was like, what? Really? I was like, that's crazy. I really did not see that coming. But I mean, I'm not just saying like, wow, a spectacle happened. Like, it was very interesting too. And just really great.
So I will say this also, that the movie made me feel a lot of things. Now, they weren't always positive emotions, but like there was some, I just would feel so uncomfortable. And you really felt the outsiderness of this kid and how being an outsider in an already displaced community is just so it's so dangerous and so scary. And you felt every bit of that.
I did feel when the movie ended, I did feel like, what was the point? But I also felt like good things.
When the movie ended, I was like, whoa. Because it was not a natural end to a film.
No.
I was was that a story? Was that a conclusion of sorts?
What was the theme?
The theme was about hypermasculinity. Was about how when you're in a marginalized community, you rely on any source of power. And in that community, the young disaffected men, they rely on being as masculine as possible and not having any like human or emotional connections. And that's how he had to shed anything to do with his homosexuality and just become a hard drug dealer.
I guess that makes sense. I guess that fully justifies Mahershala Ali's character, because he just wants to be like him exactly.
Right. And yeah, I also...
But it was still like when it ended, I was still like, I don't know. I don't get it. I like it if it was more tied up in a bow.
I like to be spoon fed a little bit.
Explosions. Yeah. Some tits. Sorry, I say that as a joke a lot, but then it's especially funny about homosexual men. do you want to go through the plot?
Sure. I could start out. Okay. This does do some pretentious art house things, which I think in the Wikipedia it said this is a combination of an art house / hood film.
Yeah.
My monitor just stopped working.
Oh, you know what else does not feel authentic like this movie? La La Land.
You know, with La La Land, it's like, let's get some A-list actors, but make sure they're really mediocre singers and dancers. People are gonna love that. But make them sing live so it's real.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck am I? I hate La La Land. La La Land is like how Hollywood just fucking loves movies about themselves. It's like, you know, it's like living in LA. Remember that highway? That's in LA. It's like, gah.
Yeah.
Remember at the end of the movie where he's like, I'm going to Paris for 3 months. She's going to Paris for 3 months. So I guess we can just never be together ever again. What a tragic.
Just such a heartbreaking couple. It's like, sort of like when the crack addicted mother says, I still love you. It's almost like that.
It's almost it's that pretty, kind of emotional.
It's pretty comparable, I would say. Which one won again? I forget.
That fucking movie. Anyway, sorry. So we were kind of talking about this, how this movie's a little pretentious. And one of the things is they have it in play acts with, you know, the strings in the background.
I like that, actually. I like title cards.
You like title cards?
Well, because I'm an idiot, and I don't. When I see title cards, all YouTube videos I watch now have title cards in them. So I think of that as my first thing. I don't think even think of like art house cinema.
Actually, I always just think of Wes Anderson films, and this movie actually reminded me of like a Wes Anderson film really? A lot. Oh. Well, just that it's very artistic and not really about anything, right? I mean, isn't that?
Yeah, that's a little unfair to say it's not about stuff.
It's very unfair. Wes Anderson is way more about nothing than this film. Anyway, so the first title card is Little. We're in Liberty City, Miami, as Sam mentioned, at the height of the crack epidemic, which I guess would be the late 90s, probably. I like that they didn't actually beat over your head in what time period it was. I like past films where it's like, what is it even? So Afro-Cuban drug dealer Juan, played by Ali. How do you say his name?
Mahershala.
That's not even hard. I don't know what my problem is.
Well, it's not like Zach. I don't know.
Yeah. He finds Chiron, a withdrawn child who goes by the nickname Little, and he's hiding from a group of bullies in a crack house. Juan lets Chiron spend the night with him and his girlfriend Teresa before returning Chiron to his mother Paula, who revokes his TV privileges for worrying her. Chiron continues to spend time with Juan, kind of looks at him like a father figure. It's very sweet. He teaches him how to swim. He mentors him. He's telling him, hey man, you can choose your own path in life. But can he, Michael? Can he?
This movie is good. Also that like it helps when there's like the dramatic stuff. The dramatic things feel more realistic in the end, because the movie doesn't start like, oh, everything sucks. His life sucks. Because like the mom does seem kind of normal at this point.
Right. You know what I mean? I believe she's a healthcare worker. They put her in scrubs to make it a little sadder later.
One night, Juan encounters Paula smoking crack with one of his customers. Juan berates her for her addiction and for neglecting her son, but she rebukes him for selling crack to her in the first place. All the while, they argue over Chiron's upbringing. She implies that she knows why Chiron gets tormented by his fears, alluding to the way he walks before going home and taking out her frustration on Chiron.
Can I say how dumb I am? I feel like if I didn't know that this was about a young gay man, that I wouldn't have gotten what she meant. I thought she just meant he's like a little wimpy or something.
Yeah, I would have been equally confused. But I think that's okay. I think you would get it eventually.
Well, right. And then the next scene, when the next day, Chiron admits to Juan and Teresa that he hates his mother and asks what a faggot is. Juan tells him it is a word used to make gay people feel bad. He tells Chiron there's nothing wrong with being gay and that he should not allow others to mock him. Chiron then asks Juan whether he sells drugs and whether his mother does drugs. And so, okay. So I think this was also an interesting scene because even though Juan is like a drug dealer, he's really not like, you know, big tough guy. And I think, you know, when he tells Chiron, like, you know, you shouldn't let people make you feel bad and you should, it's like, actually, even though he's the big drug dealer, he also has no power, that they just have so much powerlessness that he and Chiron probably can't follow that advice. And again, that kind of ties into the whole hypermasculinity as a defense mechanism thing.
Yeah.
I think, right?
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, it's an interesting thought.
Maybe. Anyway.
We get a second title card here. Do you like that they had the title card after they revealed the new age? Because I did not like that.
You're like, that's not how title cards work.
No, I just, they did a time skip and then the card. It's like, just feel like OCD. Just like it would be cleaner if they did the time card and then he's older.
Sam can correct me on this, but I think I remember a while ago that the play, and maybe this wasn't even the original or the what came out, but the play was going to be like there were three characters of different ages, and it wasn't until later in the play you figured out that they're all the same guy.
Yes. So in the play, the stories are told at the same time, and then halfway through the play, you realize that's the same character, just different age. Yeah. But they decided that it would be more powerful in the movie and more linear, obviously, if they told it in each segment.
Yeah, that's a better cut. That's a gimmicky. Yeah. It doesn't really fit this movie.
Yeah, but I'm just maybe that's why they would do a time jump that jarringly. It's kind of a little homage or something. Anyway.
No, keep the time jump. Just like introduce it with the card. And the card can say, and now he's older.
I totally don't remember the time card being
okay.
Like that.
Okay, sorry. So here we are. Chiron's older now. He's like a teenager. Now a teenager, Chiron juggles avoiding school bully Terrell and spending time with Teresa, who has lived alone since Juan's death. Okay, so I get why Juan is a character, but I don't get why they keep referring back to Teresa.
Yeah. I don't know. She's very famous, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, they paid money for her.
Yeah.
Juan's death. Paula, who has turned to prostitution as a result of her worsening addiction, forces Chiron to give her the money, heartbreaking scene, that he receives from Teresa.
That was sad.
Chiron's childhood friend, Kevin, tells him about a detention he received for being caught having sex with a girl in the school stairwell. And Chiron later dreams about Kevin and the girl having sex in Teresa's backyard, waking with a start. One night, Kevin visits Chiron at the beach near his house. While smoking a blunt together, the two discuss ambitions and the nickname Kevin gave Chiron when they were children. They kiss, and Kevin masturbates Chiron. Gives him a hand job. Isn't that the more natural?
I was just thinking, like, that's such a weird way to say that, but, like, is there a not weird way to say that? Like, is there a romantic, nice way to say that?
Yeah, he HJs him. That's just, like, that's the way to say it.
Gives him a little handy.
he's a handy pal.
The next morning, Terrell. Okay.
In that scene, it was, like, obvious they were going to kiss, right?
Yeah.
So that was a hard scene to watch because you're just like, just kiss already. Because it's like a long scene. Like, just
I don't know,
because
he's just so scared and awkward.
Well done scene, but the acting is so good. But for somebody who's just insane like me, I'm just like, just, I get it. I get what's happening.
Well, because I think it was supposed to be uncomfortable. So that's why they stretched out.
Yeah. I mean, it's they made the right choice. I would have just, yeah. I would have had the narration be like, and then he kissed. And everyone would have been like, what the hell? You should have had that be a real scene.
The next morning, Terrell manipulates Kevin into participating in a hazing ritual. Kevin reluctantly punches Chiron until he's unable to stand before watching as Terrell and other boys savagely attack him. When the principal urges him to reveal his attacker's identities, Chiron refuses, saying that reporting them will not solve anything. The next day, an enraged Chiron walks into class and smashes a chair over Terrell's head. What?
Great scene.
The police arrive and arrest Chiron for assault, and he's sent to juvenile hall, which all happens very quickly. This is not like scenes happening. This is just sort of implied off screen that
which
he gets
just,
sent away.
Which is crazy in this movie just because the movie is so slow.
Yeah.
So now we're at the third section.
It's slow because none of the action happens on screen.
Right. I mean, the chair is action.
Except for the chair. Let's not forget the chair.
Some hot chair action. So this movie's flying by. We're almost done with the movie. Actually, this is probably like one half of the movie, this part. Now going by the nickname Black, an adult Chiron deals drugs in Atlanta. I get that it's the point, but I really was struggling to realize he was the same character because he looks so different. But that was right. The point. He was supposed to look very different.
Right. He's all muscly and he's got a grill.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's hard, mm-hmm. as the people say.
As the parlance goes. He receives frequent calls from Paula, who asks him to visit her at the drug treatment center where she now lives. One day, Kevin calls. I'm going by this too fast because this is important.
The drug treatment center bit was very good, by the way.
What's
that? But anyway, go on. Sorry.
Kevin calls, inviting him to visit him should he ever come to Miami. While visiting Paula, Chiron breaks his silence. His mother apologizes for not loving him when he needed the most and tells him she loves him, even if he does not love her back. It's a very good scene. The two...
He's just such an understated actor, though. Sorry.
The two tearfully reconcile before Paula lets Chiron go.
Because when you imagine someone tearfully reconciling, like, oh, they're crying, they're hugging, but he's just like, he's just like stewing in it.
Yeah.
It's so good.
It's a really fucking good scene.
Chiron travels to Miami and visits Kevin at his workplace, a diner, which is such a weird scene. Anyway, I totally get what you mean about the smoking, but
yeah.
When his attempts to probe Chiron about his life result in silence, Kevin tells me he has had a child with an ex-girlfriend, and although the relationship ended, he is fulfilled by his role as a father. Chiron reciprocates by talking about his unexpected drug dealing and asks Kevin why he called. Kevin plays a song in the jukebox that made him think of Chiron.
After Kevin serves Chiron dinner, the two of them go to his apartment. Kevin tells Chiron that he is happy despite the fact that his life didn't turn out as he had hoped, resulting in Chiron breaking down and admitting that he has not been intimate with anybody since their encounter years ago, like it was a decade ago. As Kevin confronts him, Black remembers himself.
Comforts him.
What'd I say? Confronts.
Yeah.
As Kevin comforts, which is a nice thing, him, Black remembers himself as little, standing on a beach in the moonlight.
In the moonlight.
And that's why it's called that. I was thinking of that Family Guy bit. They're like, oh, I like when the characters say the movie title in the movie. Then they cut to him watching Superman. He goes, this looks like a job for Superman 4. Peter goes, oh, that's why they call it that. it's a long bit. So that's the end of the film. I don't have a good segue. Let's go to Brocall.
Bring.
Hey guys, how you doing?
Good.
John, have you seen the film Moonlight? What do you think about it?
Yeah, I saw it a few days ago. I probably made the mistake in not reading about it beforehand. So for about the first third, I was really confused constantly about, really first half, where is this going? What is the point? What are we doing here? Until I really picked up that it's like a growing, coming of age story.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really pick up on that. So I was really out of the movie, even though I really like that actor who plays Juan.
Mm-hmm. Mahershala Ali.
Yeah, that guy. I don't know people's names. I mean, really, that movie is just one note throughout the whole thing, and that note is tension. So if you like watching a movie where you're just tense all the time, watch Moonlight. I don't like that. I was tense the whole time, and really the two moments of release, the end of first act and the end of first act, while good, like the tough conversation with little Chiron and then the chair over the bully's head, mm-hmm. who was forming a gang, good moments, not sufficiently tension releasing. Yeah. So I was never there for the movie. I just kind of kept feeling tense and icky and uncomfortable. And you know me, guys, I don't love that.
Not a good vibe.
No, John doesn't even like it when characters are slightly embarrassed on screen. He just doesn't like negative feelings in films.
Yeah. When characters are doing things and embarrass themselves, I literally try to leave. I leave the room. So I get that the movie was good. Like, it looked like a play, and it looked pretty good for that. It was telling a, I guess, compelling, well-done story, but it was not for me in any respect.
Fair. Totally fair. What do you grade it?
That's a tough one because of everything I just said. I'm going to go with a B-, I think.
Perfect.
Fair grade.
Not that much going on. I don't like the central pillar of the movie, but I do recognize it was good.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Totally fair. Thank you so much for being on this podcast, John. That was Brocall. Yeah.
I like it in the film Moonstruck. When they talk about the moon all the time, so you're like, oh yeah, and then suddenly the old man goes, "La luna, it brings the man and the woman together." It's very Italian.
Sure, that's why they're speaking Italian.
Yeah, that's moon in Italian. La luna.
Yeah, totally. What's our next? What's our next film that we're gonna do?
What grade do you give Moonstruck first?
Oh yeah,
or Moonlight.
We do that here. I'll probably give it an A-. The emotional bits are good. But I feel some emptiness from it. Like, I feel like I want more. I feel like I didn't quite get totally where it was going, but it's very possible that's my own fault.
Sure.
So that's my grade.
Wait, what was it again?
A-.
I was also going to do an A-. I just think it's a really, really well done movie. I do think it's kind of a thing where the Oscars lately are doing a lot of movies that are going to be ultimately not remembered that well. And I hope this movie isn't one of them. Like, I hope it's not The Artist or Crash or whatever. No. Or fucking Green Book.
I think people remember actually films that are good. I think it's the difference. And this film's actually good.
Sure. And better than fucking La La Land.
Better than fucking La La Land.
Better than Moonstruck, though? I don't know. I'm going to have to see.
Don't know. No? I've not seen that film.
No Nicolas Cage in it?
No, yeah. God, that
he took my hand. Oh. He took my bride.
What is the next film that we're going to do?
So sorry. I'm working on the randomizer right now.
Oh, that's fair.
So wake up, Michael. When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore. That's on the soundtrack. It's like an Olive Garden soundtrack.
Did I sound in sync with you? Or did I sound delayed? Really?
I mean, yeah, you shouldn't, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, the next movie is Alien.
Oh, cool.
A Ridley Scott film.
It's a good film.
It's very good.
Yeah.
I've been told.
You've seen it.
I've definitely seen it.
Oh, okay.
Have you seen it?
Yeah.
So it'll be good.
So we're all going to just enjoy a movie we've seen before.
And excellent. We're all going to enjoy this trailer. And then cut.
That was terrible. Say, this is Flaherty's on films.
Films.
That was great. That was really good.
Nailed it.
Elaine, can you say rubbish?
Rubbish.
Yes. I do say I would like that one.